Welcome to the SOAP Bible Study Series from Oak Tree Community Church in South Bend, Indiana. We are in week two of a short study, yeah. I guess, a four-week study in the book of Daniel.
Yes, we are.
And man, I tell you, last week, just the first three chapters, we're doing three chapters a week, basically.
Yep.
And just the first three chapters last time were so packed.
Right.
With stuff, and we're seeing a progression in King Nebuchadnezzar. We're seeing a progression in exactly. Daniel and his friends. I mean, there's a lot of movement.
It's not slowing down.
No, it's not slowing down at all. So we're in chapters 4, 5, and 6 this week, and there's a ton of stuff that happens here. So we'll have to place it historically. We can't cover everything, but we'll have to place it in its history.
Right. So you brought up Nebuchadnezzar, right? And last week you brought him up at a couple specific points. I mean, this is a guy who went into Jerusalem, and I think you said before, you know, it was a little thump.
Just sort of slapped him on his way past, you know?
He took some things from the temple. He took some nobles, children, what we would call children, right?
But
young adults, and took them back with him to Babylon.
Probably mid-teens somewhere. You know, we don't really know. 13 to 17 is sort of the age range, probably.
Yeah, and then we found out that Daniel and his friends were, I think he said, 10 times better than anyone else in answering questions. And Daniel came up with the interpretation for the dream and gave all the credit to God. And we saw the friends had their own little problem, right?
Yeah.
and went into a fiery furnace, but gave also all the credit to God.
Yep.
So at the end of last week, it was your God made the list.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And that's really what it was.
Yeah.
What's sad, here's what's really, really interesting, is that 300 years earlier, King Solomon had basically relegated God to the same place. He's at the top of the list. He's the greatest. Mm-hmm. You know, he was still a little bit higher than Nebuchadnezzar gave him. You know, but for Solomon, he was the greatest of all the gods, but he was still on the list with others. Nebuchadnezzar wasn't willing to put him above Bel or some of the Babylonian gods, but, you know, he's shown he's worth something.
Yeah.
You know, in these first couple of chapters.
Yeah. So that evolves this week.
Yeah.
So it starts out with the edict goes out to everyone. You know, I, Nebuchadnezzar, you know, this God is here. And we seem to be much later in his reign, too, right?
Yeah.
I don't know that we know how much we've jumped ahead, but King Nebuchadnezzar has another dream.
Yeah.
Right?
It's interesting that we almost can place a timeline, because it's interesting. What's going to happen is he'll be taken out for 7 years, and then he'll come back. Well, in Babylonian history and world history, you don't want to record bad things that are happening to your king. But you can actually look in world history and find that Nebuchadnezzar seems to disappear.
There's not a lot going on here in this area.
Yeah, it's like, where is he? You know, Babylon is just sort of in a holding pattern for about 7 years of world history. And Nebuchadnezzar is not really on the world stage, and then he shows up again. And I think this is what explains what happened. So, do we have the exact time? No, but I think we can place
narrow
it fairly, you know, we can get down to it, right?
Yeah. So, he has a dream,
yep.
Right? And the dream is that basically there's a big tree, and the tree gets chopped down.
Yep.
And as part of the interpretation, we find out that the tree is Nebuchadnezzar.
Right.
And so it's like, wow, what's going on here?
Yep.
And much like with Israel, there's some, hey, you need to repent. You know, which God are you really going to go with?
Yep. So the tree is chopped down.
Yep.
The tree is chopped down, and then it's bound with a metal band, so that it can't grow, but it's also specifically says leave the root so it doesn't die.
Yeah. So it's in a waiting pattern.
So it's in a waiting pattern. It's exactly what it is. And Daniel comes through because, of course, Nebuchadnezzar is you know, terrified of this dream, something he doesn't understand. He calls Daniel in, and Daniel says, just like he said, you're that head of gold in chapter 2. You're this tree. And if you don't make yourself right with God, you're going to be chopped down. You'll be able to come back, but it's going to be 7 years before you can, you know, reemerge.
Yeah.
Nebuchadnezzar says, thank you for the information, and he goes about his day.
Yeah. Yeah, and then about a year later, Nebuchadnezzar is looking over his vast, you know, empire that he's built, or, you know, helped build, but well, definitely is built up.
And think a lot of people don't really know much about him or much about Babylon. You know, back in elementary school, maybe you've heard about the Hanging Gardens of Babylon,
one
right?
Of the seven wonders
one of the seven wonders of the world. So it's not like he was, you know, looking out over his small village.
Right.
Right. He's looking out at one of the seven wonders of the world. He's got this huge hanging garden, Babylon, and he's like, this is a pretty nice space.
I did this.
And that changed everything. Yeah. Look at what I have accomplished. Yeah. And God said, buddy, we talked about this, didn't we?
Yeah. Yeah. So a voice from heaven comes down, whether it's an angel or God, and basically says, you're done. Your kingdom has been removed from you, and you're going to go mad and you're going to live like an animal.
Yep.
For a while, and that happened, right? For 7 years, he lived like an animal and, you know, ate grass. What's amazing is that nobody put him out of his misery, right? Yeah. Even a son or a grandson, but yet waited for something to happen.
Yeah.
And then about 7 years later, he prayed a prayer, and the prayer's there, and man, you know, you never know where anybody's heart is, but seems like a very heartfelt prayer.
Yep.
And he was restored to the throne.
Yeah. So the key to chapter 4 is really found in verse 17 and verse 32. So verse 17 is, this is within the dream itself. Okay, there's the tree and there's the, you know, whole weird stuff going on. This announcement is made by the decree of the sentinels or the watchers. And that is actually in Judaism an angelic subgroup. Okay, there's an angelic group, the watchers. This decision is by the pronouncement of the Holy One, so that those who are alive may understand that the Most High has authority over human kingdoms. He bestows on them whomever he wishes, and he establishes over them even the lowliest of human beings. Okay, now that's in his dream, right? Daniel interprets the dream, and 12 months later, Nebuchadnezzar has his little prideful moment, right? Look at what all I did. And the voice from heaven, verse 32, you'll be driven from human society. You'll live with the wild animals. You'll be fed with grass like oxen. And seven periods of time will pass by for you before you understand that the Most High is ruler over human kingdoms and gives them to whomever he wishes. The whole purpose of this chapter is to remind Nebuchadnezzar, you are not the boss. There is a God over you, and he rules everything.
Yeah.
That's the key to chapter 4.
Well, and how awesome, not a Jewish king here, right? We have a Gentile that's coming to this understanding, which is kind of cool. And the end of chapter 4 ends with, now I, Nebuchadnezzar, praise and exalt and glorify the King of Heaven, for all of his deeds are right and his ways are just.
Yep.
This is a guy who just spent 7 years as an animal.
Yeah.
Right.
Exactly. So I would say if we look at the trajectory, the journey of Nebuchadnezzar in chapters 1 through 4, in chapter 1, he sort of is somewhat impressed with Daniel's God. Yeah, whatever. Okay, you know. In chapter 2, after Daniel interprets the dream, now God has his attention.
Yep.
In chapter 3, we have the guys in the furnace. Now he's really impressed. Right. Like, wow, he definitely makes the cut, right?
Yeah.
You get to the end of chapter 4, and now he finally realizes who God is.
He's the one.
And I think he probably, and this is my opinion, I think he probably ended his life with the true understanding of the living God. I would not be surprised to see him in eternity on our side one day.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah, we don't have time to get into it, but I think it'd be cool to take a look at Nebuchadnezzar from how the Jews view him.
Yeah.
Right? And was he a good guy or a bad guy? You know, here he sure seems like he's right with God, but he's also the one that destroys Jerusalem.
Yeah.
So it's like,
Yeah.
Okay, so chapter 5.
we fast forward.
We jump ahead.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we're not, but chapter 5 jumps ahead.
Yeah.
So we're with a brand new king in here, and it's actually the grandson.
Yeah.
Right? Of Nebuchadnezzar.
Right.
So Daniel I won't go through all the math, but Daniel has to be about...
in his 80s.
Yeah.
So this chapter 5 takes place in the year 539. Daniel was captured in 605 at the beginning of Nebuchadnezzar's reign. Yep. Belshazzar, this is the end of Babylon. Persia's going to take over. We know that date, 539. So between chapter 1 and chapter 5, it's been 66 years. So if Daniel is even 14 in chapter 1, now he's 80.
Right.
Right? So that's huge to understand this timeline.
Right, and it's really big because some lions are coming up here quick. and
we usually see...
that the guy's in his 80s.
Yeah.
Versus 8.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Okay, so the king is having a banquet, and, just 1,000 of his closest friends are there, and they're drinking, and the Bible makes a big deal out of it. Even the king is drinking in there, so we're not sure if it's a special time or what's going on.
What's interesting is that they should have been at war with Persia.
Right.
I mean, this is the night that Babylon falls to Persia, and they did it without a shot. Without firing a shot.
Right. So my understanding is they blocked off the Euphrates.
Yep.
The Euphrates went through the middle of Babylon. They blocked it off or diverted it to, over here. And then just walked
right in under the wall.
Yeah. So the town had all these safeguards, all these things, but none of them got triggered.
Nope.
Yeah. So you could see this army coming in, but yet in the, let's just say they're in the middle of the town. They don't know.
Oh, they're in the palace. They're in the palace. And so this is the famous account of handwriting on the wall. It's a term we still use. You're at work and there's layoffs. Oh, we see the handwriting on the wall. This is where it comes from.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. They're drinking and then the king gets a bright idea. Let's drink from the cups that were taken from the tabernacle.
Yeah.
Or the temple.
The temple in Jerusalem,
Yeah.
Right. I'm pretty sure Grandpa got some gold cups from...
he remembered that or knew that.
Yeah.
Right. So, and then it says, as they drank, they praised the gods, small g, of gold, silver, bronze, iron, wood, and stone. So, like you were saying, there's just a whole bevy of gods that they're going.
Yep.
Okay, so then what happened with the whole handwriting on the wall?
All of a sudden, a hand appeared and wrote in Aramaic. Now, this is interesting because from chapter 2 to chapter 7 is not in Hebrew.
Yeah, it's in our Bible.
In the Hebrew Bible, it's in Aramaic. Right. Which is the language of the Gentiles. Okay, that's the language, the Chaldeans, that Daniel and his friends had to learn so it's because from chapter 2 to chapter 7 is dealing with Gentile kingdoms. So they see writing on the wall these words, Mene, Mene, Tehel, Upharsin. And basically, they freak out. Because they're not sure if they're just drunk, they're not sure if they're high, they're not sure what's going on, but there's writing now on the wall that everybody can see. And the queen mother, which is very interesting because it could have been Belshazzar's grandmother, Nebuchadnezzar's wife.
Right.
It could have been Belshazzar's mom, Nebuchadnezzar's daughter. Either way, the queen mother says, there used to be a guy around here who interpreted stuff like this for your grandfather.
Yeah,
I think he's retired now, but he's probably still around. Let's see if we can dig him up.
Yeah, right. Isn't that wild?
And so they called Daniel out, and Belshazzar's like, I will make you the third ruler in the kingdom, because Belshazzar was second, still under his dad. They were co-ruling. I'll make you the third ruler in the kingdom if you tell me what this means. And this is funny, because in chapter 2, Nebuchadnezzar actually made Daniel second in the kingdom. From what we could tell, somewhere up there.
Right.
And in chapter 2, Daniel was a young man speaking very respectfully to the king. In chapter 5, his personality's changed. He's 80. You just dragged him out of bed.
He doesn't have a lot to lose.
He's like, you can keep your kingdom. You can keep jewels. You can keep your neck.
I don't want your money.
But I'm going to tell you what it means.
Yeah. And so what
it means... your your kingdom has been weighed in the balances and found lacking, found wanting.
Yeah, isn't that hurts? That hurts to read.
Yeah,
you know, you've been judged.
Yep, and you didn't even know it.
And
you lost.
And yeah, you didn't quite come up to what we thought.
And the last word, eupharsin, eperes, is a play on words with Persia. You will be defeated tonight by Persia. And while they were there talking, well, Belshazzar's like, bring out the necklaces. He's third in the kingdom. It's like, yeah, why do I want to be third in the kingdom that's falling in 2 seconds?
Well, that, but also he's basically telling the guy, you're dying tonight.
Yeah.
But, and he gets promoted to third, right?
He doesn't care.
Yeah.
Doesn't care. And that night, Persia walks in, takes over the whole thing, and it's essentially almost a bloodless thing.
Yeah. So Persia actually taking over, I mean, we know it happened from historical facts.
Yeah.
It's omitted here. I think because everybody knew it.
Yeah.
Right? So he didn't have to put it down. Yeah. He wanted to focus on the story with the hands and other things that was going on.
Yeah. All it says at the end of chapter 5 is that very night, Belshazzar, the Babylonian king, was killed. Darius the Mede took control of the kingdom when he was about 62 years old. Now, the thing is that it was sort of a two-pronged kingdom. There was the Medes and the Persians. It was called Medo-Persia. And in the statue dream of chapter 2, that was the two arms of iron. Okay, that was the two arms of iron. And silver. The two arms of silver, which is going to make an appearance here. The reason why that shows up is going to show up in chapter 6. But it was two-pronged. Nebuchadnezzar was the head of gold, but the conquering nation had two parts to it, the Medes and the Persians. So it was the Persian Empire, and so Cyrus is going to be ruling from Persia, but he needs somebody to
be there
right. In Babylonia.
Yeah, because if you think about it, they doubled in size.
Babylon is still huge,
right.
And he can't rule everything.
Right. Right.
Basically, Babylon is Iraq. Persia is Iran. Iran and Iraq, okay?
Right.
You can't sit there in Iran and run all of Iraq.
Right.
Right? So you need to have somebody there. So Cyrus put Darius in charge. So he effectively was the king, the new king of Babylon, but Babylon is now a province,
or
a larger region underneath Persia.
Right. So what he decided to do was he wanted three supervisors under him, right? Three people that he could blame, right?
Yeah.
Just,
yeah.
You know, go trust do
or
my
blame
work.
Whatever you're...
Yeah, and then those three would have 120 people reporting to them. So divide
all
up the country...
Still within Babylon.
Yeah,
right.
Divide it up into 120, whether you call it states, you know, whatever, countries,
right.
Counties.
Yep.
Doesn't matter. All reporting into one of three heads who report up to the king.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the cool thing is, Daniel's one of those three.
And he's 80. He wants to be retired by now, and he's dragged back into government.
Right.
Reminds me of The Godfather. You know,
they pull me back. Yeah. So these other two supervisors are jealous of Daniel, and they devise a scheme. And what's the scheme?
The only thing that they can attack him on. They can't attack him on politics. They can't attack him on his track record. The only thing they can find to attack him on is his character.
Right.
And his character is one that no matter what else goes on, he is 100% dedicated to the God of Israel.
Right.
And one of the ways that shows is that he prays three times a day. And I don't think that counts breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
Yeah, right.
You know, he goes to his room, he opens the windows toward Jerusalem.
Yep.
And he prays toward this temple that, you know, no longer exists, but that's the last place the God's presence was.
Right. So these two guys tell the king, hey, why don't you make a rule that for the next 30 days, everybody has to only pray to you, can't pray to anybody else.
Right.
Kind of pretty devious.
Well, and
knowing that.
Yeah. And because he's still solidifying his power and, you know, trying to, you know, that's how they came at it, is you need to really make sure everybody's under your thumb.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. So, of course, Daniel hears this. He goes up to his room.
I got to talk to God about this.
Right.
He I really should talk to God about this. And of course they catch him and aha, you're praying to your God, you know. Yeah. And Darius is now furious. He's embarrassed because they tricked him. He's furious that, you know, this happened. He trusts Daniel.
So where does that trust come from?
Daniel's been a well-known entity in Babylon for more than 60 years now.
Yeah.
There's no way that he had not done dealings with Persia, hadn't done dealings. I mean, even if Darius had never met him, he certainly heard about him, right? There's no question that Daniel was well-known even outside of Babylon.
Okay.
So the fact that he got to meet this Daniel, got to, you know, work with him, the trust level was very, very quick.
Yeah. So the king couldn't change the law.
Right.
So the best he could do was offer Daniel some encouragement.
Yeah.
Right. And the penalty was being thrown
in the lion's den. And this is really interesting, because back in chapter 2, when Nebuchadnezzar sees the statue, gold, silver, bronze, iron, it says that each succeeding nation was inferior to the previous one. So Medo-Persia was inferior to Babylon. This is one of the things that tells us how they were inferior, okay? Under Medo-Persian law, once it was signed into law, nobody, including the king, could change it. That's what Daniel says here. We see that in history. Nebuchadnezzar never would have been held hostage by a law.
Yeah.
Right?
Right. Just did what he wanted. And
he was addicted, and there's no way. And so from a government standpoint, Medo-Persia was inferior because even their kings were not above the law. You go to bronze, that's Greece. What did they bring in? You start having democracy and republic and stuff like that. That's even a weaker government. And then iron is Rome, which is the republic and the arguments between the Senate and the emperor and all this stuff. Right. And that's even a weaker government. So you see the inferiority of the governments in the metals, and this is proof.
And also the gold moving to silver, right?
Yeah.
And
so it's like worse. You know, it's less metals. Valuable. Yeah. It's a less valuable metal. It's an inferior metal, and it shows that it's. But it's stronger. It's really interesting because silver is stronger than gold. Bronze is stronger than silver, and iron is definitely stronger than bronze. And so each nation became stronger and stronger. Possibly even more and more cruel, depending on who you ask. But government-wise, they became inferior. They were the government was weaker.
Yeah, that's kind of.
And so, cool. Darius is like, I can't change the law. You're the king of the. Sorry, I can't. Medo-Persian law. I can't change it. I'm going to have to throw you in the lion's den.
So he's actually there. They put him in the lion's den. They seal it with a stone. He uses his signet ring on it.
Yep.
Goes to bed, comes back early the next morning.
Which is
funny. Are you okay?
Yeah, like, which is funny because they never even considered how long you're supposed to be in there, because overnight you're going to die anyway. They never thought that there was potential for escape. So they didn't say you have to be in the lion's den for a week. You have to. It's just you have to be put in there. So he was put in there. Nothing happened and he came out.
Yeah. So he comes back the next day. Of course, you know, they take him out. Yay!
Right.
And the king is still ticked off.
Oh, absolutely.
He takes those other two rulers and all their family, puts them in the lion's den, and bad things happen to them.
Well, you know what's interesting? It says in verse 24, they did not even reach the bottom of the den before the lions overpowered them and crushed all their bones. It's a fun, interesting little detail that in your Sunday school that you have to make sure you bring out.
I liked verse 22. How was David saved?
Daniel.
So, wow, I wrote down David. It says, "My God sent his angel and closed the lion's mouths, so that they had not harmed me, because I was found to be innocent before him. Nor have I done any harm to you, O king."
Innocent before God.
That last part. Yeah.
Yep. And notice the prayer and the edict at the end of chapter 6 is similar to chapter 5. Chapter 4 is similar to chapter 3.
Yeah.
There's this recurring theme that, you know what, maybe God is who he says he is. And one ruler after another is coming to this realization.
Yeah. Yeah, good.
This
well, might have taken a little while, but yeah. Yeah, we got to the end of chapter 6.
So when Daniel was a teenager in chapter 1, he said, listen, my judge is God. And here he is as an 80-year-old, and yep. he says,
same way.
Listen, my judge is God. I will not bow to your thing. My judge is God. Yeah. And at the end of the day, that's all I can go off.
Right.
Right. So this ends the mostly historical little bit of prophecy section.
Yep.
In the next 2 weeks, we will do much more prophecy.
Yeah. Takes a little
bit of history.
Yep.
And some good stuff coming.
Yeah.
So what's the takeaway? You can trust God.
Yeah.
The
simple enough.
The three guys in the furnace said, even if he doesn't protect us, we're not going to bow. We're not going to, you know, worship your God, O King. Daniel said, listen, you're not going to keep me from praying. I'm going to pray to my God no matter what you do to me.
Yep.
That's
Nebuchadnezzar.
Yep. That's some pretty good examples to follow there.
Right.
So hopefully you found this enjoyable, interesting, and helpful in your spiritual life. If you do, let us know. If you have questions, also let us know. We'd love to hear those and help you work through some things. Please share this with your family and friends, and we will be back next time to do chapters 7, 8, and 9. See you then.
Bye, everybody.